Howdy, y'all. Bet you didn't realize you were going to have an international speaker this morning. Now, generally, I use a lot of humor when I speak, but for the last couple days, I've positioned myself behind Mr. Welty a little bit, and I noticed that every time someone said something funny, he'd be writing down in his notes. So I don't know what that really means, but I'm not going to take a chance. Now, it well could be that he's writing things down to use when he goes back home in his own messages. I don't know. But like I said, I'm not going to take a chance. To begin with this morning, I'd like to relate a story to you about the red marble. During the waning years of the Depression in a small southeastern Idaho community, this lady writes that she used to stop by Mr. Miller's produce stand where she'd get fresh produce whenever it was available. Food and money were still extremely scarce at that time, so bartering was used extensively. One particular day, Mr. Miller was bagging some potatoes for her, and she noticed a small boy, delicate of structure, kind of ragged, yet clean, talking with Mr. Miller, and he was eyeing some fresh green peas. And Mr. Miller and the boy were talking, and this lady couldn't help but overhear because she was kind of close. He said, "Hello, Barry." He said, "Hi, Mr. Miller. How are you doing today?" "I'm doing fine. I'm just looking at them there peas." "Well, would you like to take some home with you?" He said, "No, haven't got any money for it." Mr. Miller said, "Well, Barry, they're good." "Yeah, I know. They sure look fine." Then Mr. Miller says, "Well, how's your ma?" "Well, she's getting a little better. She's getting stronger each day." "You sure there isn't anything I can help you with?" "No, I haven't got any money." Mr. Miller says, "Well, what have you got to trade with me for some produce?" "Well, I got my prize marble here. It's a beauty." Mr. Miller said, "Wow, that is a good marble looking at it." He says, "But you know, this is a blue marble, and I'm kind of partial to red. Do you have a red one like that at home?" He goes, "Not exactly, but almost." Mr. Miller said, "I'll tell you what. You take home this bag of produce, and the next time you stop by this way, you bring me that red marble, and I'll take a look at it." "Sure will, Mr. Miller. Thanks." And he was on his way. Well, this lady continues to write that Mrs. Miller had been standing nearby, came over to help the lady, and with a smile she said, "You know, there are two other boys in this community just like him. They're from very poor circumstances, and my husband just loves to barter with them for some fresh produce. When they come back with the red marbles, and they always come back, he decides, well, he doesn't like the red one. After all, he would rather trade some produce for maybe a green one or an orange one." And the lady said, "You know, I left that stand smiling to myself, impressed with this man." A short time later, she had moved away from that community and was gone for several years. And recently, she had the opportunity to come back, and she found out that Mr. Miller had died. And the viewing was going to be that very evening, and she knew that her friends wanted to attend the viewing, so she agreed to go along with them. On their arrival at the mortuary, they fell in the line where they were to meet the relatives of the deceased and offer any words of comfort that they could. "Ahead of us in line," she writes, "were three young men. One was in an army uniform, the other two well-dressed in dark suits and white shirts. They approached Mrs. Miller, standing, smiling, composed by her husband's casket. Each of the young men hugged her, gave her a kiss on the cheek, and whispered a few words in her ear, and then headed over to the casket, where one by one they placed their own warm hand on the pale, cold hand of Mr. Miller laying there. Each one left, very awkwardly, wiping his eyes, and it was this lady's turn to come up to Mrs. Miller, and she talked with her and expressed who she was and reminded her of the story of the marbles and the boys. And Mrs. Miller said, "Those three young men that just left were those three boys. And they have just told me how much they appreciated all the things that Mr. Miller had traded with them over the years for produce. And they said that now at last, when Mr. Miller couldn't change his mind on the size or the color of the marbles, they came to pay their debt." Mrs. Miller said, "We'd never had a great deal of wealth of this world, but right now Jim would consider himself the richest man in Idaho." She walked over. With loving gentleness, she lifted up the lifeless fingers of her husband, and there revealed three shiny, red, magnificent marbles. And the moral of this is, brethren, we're not going to be remembered by our many words. And that's tough for a preacher to say, because with all our talking and visiting and counseling, it's not our words that people are going to remember us by. It's going to be our deeds, as Mr. Miller's was. And what better time and better place than here at the Feast of Tabernacles to start expressing our good deeds one to another. And this has kind of been the theme a little bit as we've started off this Feast of Tabernacles. I've got to tell a little story of my granddaughter. After Mr. Carey's message, the next morning, my little granddaughter reached over to my wife and says, "Grandma, I want to fill your bucket. But I'm going to have to dip first." And with our coffee breath in the morning, it was a little offensive to my granddaughter, so my granddaughter whispered over, "I'm going to give you a couple of breath mints." So we're never too young to start giving and sharing and doing for others. You know, this world always sets number one first. We have this attitude of seeking first for ourselves rather than sharing and giving. You know, Mr. Miller had a different outlook. Turn to James 1:27, if you would. James 1:27, and I'm reading out of the New International Version. I like that, the way this reads a little better. "Religion that God our Father accepts as pure and faultless is this, to look after orphans and widows in their distress and keep oneself from being polluted by the world." Now, in the King James Version, it says, "Visit the fatherless and the widows." Well, you can get from that, well, you go over and say hi, sit down, chat for a while, and go. But that's not the connotation. We're supposed to look in, look after, and take care of those that are less fortunate. If you look over in chapter 2 of James, starting in verse 15, it says, "Suppose a brother or sister is without clothes and daily food. If one of you says to him, 'Go, I wish you well, keep warm and well fed,' but does nothing about his physical needs, what good is that?" I know we're out of our homes. We're out of our regular routines. Things can go wrong. The bed may be less comfortable than the bed you're used to at home. The neighbors may come in after fellowshipping a little later and keep us awake at night. The cleaners may have spotted your best dress that you wanted to wear on the last great day. Any number of things can happen. It can go on and on and on. Things that we can get upset about that will put us in a foul mood so we won't treat each other as well as we should. But we have to fight against that, brethren. You know, in years past, we had several feast sites that numbered in the tens of thousands. So with all the smiles, good attitudes, politeness, cooperative spirits, that was readily seen in the areas where we met. But now we're a much smaller group, and just one bad attitude, one sour look, one surly word to a waiter or a motel clerk, or a harsh word to a husband or wife is going to be noticed, and it'll give us a negative appearance. So I'd like to encourage us all to put our best foot forward, to do good deeds one to another, to each other, to the local business, whoever we deal with while we're here. Look around here while you're at the feast and see if you can see or hear of someone that has need. If they do, try to take care of them. Try to help them out. Try to assist in a cheerful way. Brethren, how important is it to Jesus Christ that we look after one another and help one another? Turn, if you would, to Matthew 25. Matthew chapter 25. In verses 31 to 33, Christ will separate people as a shepherd, which separate sheep and goats. He'll put people on his left hand and people on his right hand. Picking it up in verse 34, "Then the king will say to those on his right hand, 'Come, you who are blessed by my Father, take your inheritance, the kingdom prepared for you since the creation of the world.'" And then it tells why these people had qualified and were selected to receive the kingdom. Verse 35, "For I was hungry and you gave me something to eat. I was thirsty and you gave me something to drink. I was a stranger, and you invited me in. I needed clothes, and you clothed me. I was sick, and you looked after me. I was in prison, and you came to visit me.' Then the righteous answered and said, 'Lord, when would we do these things for you? We've never met you. We've never seen you.' And in verse 40, it said, the king will reply, I tell you the truth. Whatever you did for one of the least of these brothers of mine, you did for me. And then conversely, it says to those on his left hand, depart from me. You're evil. You're cursed. And they cried, and why? Why are we cursed? In verse 45, he replies, I tell you the truth. Whatever you did not do for one of these of the least, you did not do for me. So it's important to Jesus Christ and virtually imperative for our entrance into the kingdom that we do serve and do good deeds for others. I've heard of people years past at the Feast of Tabernacles who literally, when it came mealtime, sat in the room and ate out of a can of beans because they didn't have any means. This is an extreme case, very rare, but it has happened. And brethren, this shouldn't be. Here at the feast, we should beware of the needs of our brothers and sisters and see if we can't pitch in if help is needed. And sometimes it's sad to say we get so involved with our families and all the things that we want to do, all the things we want to see, the places we want to go, the restaurants where we want to eat, that sometimes inadvertently people fall through the cracks and we don't know what's going on. So rather than looking inward and to ourselves, we need to look outward to our brethren and make sure that everyone has a good feast. That's the difference between living and living well. Now if the sound crew will go ahead and play a sound bite, I'd like you to listen to and listen to some of these words, and it'll try to enhance the meaning of what I'm trying to get to.
Had a nice little life. A little boat, a little beach, a little routine I like. Ocean view, free to go with the flow anywhere that I wanted to. I love the moment you set foot on my shore. That's when I knew there's a difference in living and living well.
I'll repeat them. This talks about a fella who had a nice little life, a little boat, a little beach, a little routine he liked, a blue ocean view, free to go with the flow anywhere that he wanted to. And then it talks about a woman coming into his life, but the moment you set foot on my shore, that's when I knew. And this is what I want you to understand and get. There's a difference between living and living well. You can't have it all by yourself. Something's always missing till you share it with someone else. There's a difference in living and living well. Brethren, let's not be guilty of overlooking others because we want to enjoy everything we have with our own families, with our own circle of friends, and by ourselves. God tells us to care for the fatherless and the widow, pointing us in the direction of the people that can't fully take care of themselves as well as the rest of us. But then we're supposed to allow that to grow so we begin thinking of others first all of the time instead of thinking of ourselves first. And brethren, here at the Feast of Tabernacles, there are just so many opportunities. A friendly smile, a warm handshake, opening the door and holding it for someone who's elderly or a lady with a baby and a lot of things in her hands. Being cooperative with the motel management. And I don't mean to be a doormat, but brethren, how many times do we insist on having our way in something when perhaps it would be better just to be left for the sake of peace and tranquility? Brethren, let's have a great remainder of this 2002 Feast of Tabernacles here in Hagerstown. Live the example of Mr. Miller who followed the exhortation in James 1:27, because that's the difference between living and living well.